So COVID-23 is another virus that attacks the brain tissue.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
It is episode 136, and I'm sitting here with Ted Willett on a Friday night. How are you, Ted?
Good. You, Jimmy?
I'm doing well. A little tired tonight. It's been kind of a long, drawn-out week, but nothing major happened. Just, just kind of low-key and, I don't know, just sluggish.
Sluggish. Is it the weather? Do you think it's the weather? The weather's, like, changing. It's like cold, and then it's hot, and then it's cold. It's doing that.
Well, what I was thinking, it's been pretty chilly since the weather broke a couple weeks ago. So, like, the mornings I'm riding out, you know, and, I mean, I wouldn't say bundled up, but I'm warm. I mean, it's, you know, I put on a coat and stuff and gloves and a hat, and the ride in is probably in the upper 30s, you know, and it's pretty chilly. But you know what I think it is? I think it's just the sun's going down earlier. It's darker, longer, and that's only going to change tomorrow, you know, by another hour.
That's right.
So it's like, you know, you're eating dinner in the dark, and it's just that time of year when like everything kind of just, you have that like mental shift with the daylight, and the mornings are dark and the evenings are dark, and like the middle of the day there you have the sun. But yeah, I don't know how people in like Alaska and stuff do it.
Right.
I mean, it's that just has to be brutal. I mean, the sun comes up at like 10 and goes down at 3 or something.
What is that called? Your Acadia rhythm or something?
Circadian rhythm.
That's what it's called.
Yeah, circadian rhythm. Yeah, and maybe it's just that. I think it's like just, you know, after like so many hours of it being dark outside, you're just like, ugh, I'm ready for bed.
But you know what helps with your energy?
A beer. Yeah.
You read my mind.
Well, it's easy to do. So what do you have?
Today I have a little throwback. We've had this once before on the pod. We had this I should have looked up. I had this for a whole week, but I didn't look up what episode it was where we were all in person in my backyard around the fire pit drinking this. It's in the Fremont Imperial Winter Ale. I think we had the 2019 varietal, the B-Bomb.
And what year is this?
And this is the 2018. So I went with one year older.
Wow. Was that expensive? I mean, there's like melted wax and stuff.
You know, it's not as expensive as that Goose Island that I had a couple weeks ago. So the Goose Island's like $25 beer. This is like $17. I was like, this is much better than some of the prices. So.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm gonna pop this one open. Wish you guys were here to split it with me.
I wish I was there too. And while you're figuring out how to get the wax off, I have a can. It's not a bottle. It's not waxed. It might be hairless, but it's not waxed. Tramping and Trailing Imperial Stout, 10% ABV. It says Tramping and Trailing is a s'mores inspired stout brewed with graham crackers, marshmallows, coca nibs, honey, and coffee. Sometimes I get nervous with these because they're either going to be completely outrageously amazing or complete just, what am I eating? I don't even know, but we'll find out.
It's like hashtag doing too much, you know?
Yeah.
All right. I got to get the utility knife out.
It smells like a chocolate imperial stout. So, it's coming out like tar.
Nice.
Wow. And the head on it is like a rich chocolatey cream. It's not white. You know, it's like really deep tan. I like that.
We might have an arms race today. What do you got there?
I have a 10%. What do you have?
14%.
Oh, you would have beat me either way because my other one I was planning on is 11.
Okay.
Oh, God, I just gave away next week's beer. Now you can plan according.
I'll let you have next week.
So like I said, a low-key week. Couple quick news bits, though. Quibi's finally dead.
Oh, yeah. We forgot to do that last week. And yes.
Quibi's dead. I think they misjudged the timing, you know? And I think you said it best when you said Quibi was probably meant for, like, to be a quick while-you-wait-in-line 5-minute video sketches and all that. And everybody's at home watching TV, you know? They're not waiting in line anywhere.
Yeah. So I've listened to many, many hot takes of why it failed and all that stuff. And I think we had it early on, and I grabbed some clips out of our show from Quibi that we did about Quibi. And we were trying to give it, what's that pucker?
Oh boy. Yeah. It's like super bitter. Yeah. I don't know what to make. It's almost, it didn't say anything about peanut butter, but it tastes like there's peanut butter in it. Let me have a few more. I'll let you know. I'll let you know it finishes at the end. How about your, wow, your beer looks good too, man. It looks just like this beer.
It's a beautiful winter ale.
Yeah, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's, again, it has, it's called an ale, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it really, it feels like a stout. Are stouts, it's the same family, I guess, huh?
Stout's an ale. There's ales and lagers.
Yeah.
That's all you got.
Right. Top and bottom fermenters. That's it.
That's
tops
it.
Tops and bottoms.
That's it.
But yeah, so it's at 14%.
Wow.
And yet it's so milky smooth that it just tastes like it has the bitter notes. It has, you know, the highlights of the nice head on here. And it's just a beautifully balanced 14%. Goes down smooth.
I will say the second sip was definitely better. I think it was that initial palate, raw palate, you know, and the bitterness hits you and you're like, whoa, that's bitter. And then the second one was like, okay, you know, this is actually really good.
Yeah. So what I was saying about Quibi was, I think we were trying to give it a lot of space, you know, and I never know where my next job may come from. So I wasn't about to like burn bridges, but I think
that's true.
We had said that, YouTube and now TikTok, they kind of rule this space of like filling time between things. You know, my Bryce, you know, he's, you know, a bit addicted to YouTube.
Aren't we all?
And he has his Mark Rober and he can find something new from Mark Rober, some new experiment that he does with elephant toothpaste or something like that, you know, and it's just like, there's so much fodder out there that I don't know how you could, I think Jason Calacanis said it best. He's like, it's still a startup. So it still should have been treated like a startup. Instead, it was like a media conglomerate's play in the space of startups, you know? So that's why it had this huge dollar amount, you know, multi-billion dollars thrown at it to get it off the ground, but it didn't speak to the right audience.
Yeah, and it's shocking. I mean, what was the life? Like 7 months or something? Right. I mean, like they didn't even give it a year. Like talk about a throw of money to just go nowhere.
I think it speaks to Katzenberg. I mean, this is... The to fold like it did really speaks more to Katzenberg's savvy of like, you know, he was entrusted with multiple billions of dollars from his friends in the media industry, right? Basically, he just called in all his chits and said, you know, give me a gamble. I'll make a gamble. Your money will be in it. When we win, it'll be big, good for everybody. But then when you know you have a losing hand and you still have a pile of money, to get up and walk away from that table, I mean, that takes guts and balls and you know what I mean? And he's got to, you know, put his tail between his legs and give money back to his investors. If you had done it any later, then the question is, you know, if I gave you, you know, $100 million, right? And you burned through 50 of it, right? And then you came to me and said, here's 45 because, you know, I have some expenses and things like that. You know, we'll get them next time, or I'll rejigger and we'll have another studio or do something else, right? I think that saves a lot more of relationships than, you know, trying really hard and being even more bullheaded about your take on this space.
It's like the Silicon Valley mantra that says like fail fast.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, you don't need to sit around on a failed project and just like run that thing so deep into the grave.
Right.
That you can't ever come back for anything else again because you just burned through so much cash.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, just, you know what, this ain't working. Let's just do something else. We'll try it. We'll get them next time, Tiger.
But like the Hydra in Greek mythology, once you cut the head of a streaming service off, what pops up in its place?
Another streaming service.
Two more, right? So you sent me an article today just right before this. I didn't even read it yet.
Yeah, I think it launches on the first, T-Vision. So T-Mobile and Sprint now get a streaming service that goes to your TV that does everything. And I like their tagline. It's TV, finally done right. I mean, when did TV come out? In like the 50s? And it's finally done right?
Thank God. Thank God T-Mobile stepped into the TV space because...
Because we've been floundering Hulu and for Netflix content. Yeah. And HBO, nobody knew what the hell they were doing. So I guess, you know, like, because Game of Thrones was a complete failure. So I guess we'll see what T-Mobile can do. Like, what? TV finally done right? Who comes up with that tagline?
I don't know.
Well, you're on T-Mobile, aren't you?
That's what I wrote back to you. I don't even have to read the article. Obviously, I'm going to get it. I'm going to be grandfathered in, hopefully. We'll get a little free month or maybe a nice year. That'd be nice if you gave us a year. I mean, I was thinking about jumping.
I don't know. It looks like you got to pay.
Even if you're a T-Mobile customer?
Well, I didn't really. I'm not a T-Mobile customer, so I didn't read it terribly close. Maybe I should have. But just for the sake of like the news story, I guess. But yeah, it looks like it's $10 for this package. It's not expensive, but it just looks like, you know, to get different things. There's different packages. There's comedy and drama and you know, all the different things that they're trying to sell. And it looks like it's just a lot of shows that are on everything else, you know? I mean, it's just another aggregator of streaming.
Well, you want to know what's not on everything else? Ted Lasso's not on anything else. Ted Lasso's only on
Apple
TV Plus. And I found out, I listened to a podcast. I only listened to a couple of non-football podcasts this week. And the one that you sent me, Making Sense, that was a great COVID primer where we are right now in COVID.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
So that was fun to listen to. Quite depressing, but yeah, worth listening.
Well, and the guy's like, yeah, we'll be going till 2024 or whatever. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. And then the other one I listened to was, have you heard of Bren Brown?
Brene Brown.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Brene.
So yes, I have.
So you've heard of her more than I have because I haven't watched her TED Talks or anything. But she does TED Talks, and I guess she's a leader, like a emotional EQ kind of person, emotional quotient, you know, and she's all into leadership and all that. All the corporates love her.
Right.
And she, it turns out, is a huge Ted Lasso fan. So it was so funny because, you know, we're working on Bitcast, and Bitcast just launched in the App Store. So please go out and get it, and you can listen to this podcast and all your other podcasts and clips, share them with friends, make videos from the clips, put them on Twitter, put them on Instagram, put them wherever you put your little clips. But I clipped one of her episodes, the one with Ted Lasso, and I put it on Twitter. And I just had it on my little personal account, and I kind of rehashed the thing where I said, you know, the other night I couldn't go to sleep, so I put on Ted Lasso. So I said, in my tweet, I said, I like to put on, even though I've seen the whole season, I said I like to put on Ted Lasso if I can't go to sleep and hope that there are people like Ted in the world, because he's just so positive and such a positive force in this losing football team. And right while we're watching Mandalorian, sorry, that's for the end of the show when we do that, Jason Sudeikis liked my tweet. So it's like, it's so funny when like famous people like your tweet and you like freak out because you're like, oh, like a famous person like read my thought and he might have listened to my clip. And in Bitcast, you can make a voice tag for yourself. So every clip that I make has my voice tag at the top of it. And in the video clip, you can see that you can hear that it's a Ted Lasso saying that's in the video clip right before. Like every video clip that I make has my little video stamp on it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Really quick. Let's back up just a sec. So
yeah.
TV Vision Live is $40 a month.
Ugh, what is that? That's the T-Mobile thing?
Yeah,
ugh.
And it's 30 channels. You could get what they call TV Vision Vibe.
Okay.
That's $10 a month, and that's, I guess, not live, and that's 30 channels. And then you could add a la carte to the Vibe at $6 a channel, so that would be like Star, Showtime, etc.
So it's a bundle. It's just a bundling. It's not even like its own content.
It's an aggregator.
Yeah.
What I would want to know is the person who put this together, what was their thinking in that, you know what, people don't have TV right now, let's put this out and we'll bring them television. That's kind of the way it sounds, but yeah. It's like everybody has what they need, I guess. I don't know, but we'll find out.
I think maybe the cable cut, the cord cutters are there, and maybe the cord cutters living in a world where they maybe, I don't, I'm trying to come up with a reason why to do this, but there's no good reason why to bundle yet. At least not bundle in the old way.
Yeah. So, well, you know, like they said, it's TV finally done right. Mm. Like I said, I had a low key week and I just wanted to talk about a couple of news items, but how was your week?
My week was good. Just still struggling with the school for the kids.
Oh yeah. That's an ongoing thing.
It's an ongoing struggle. And it was like, you know, but it's funny. We hit a rhythm a couple weeks ago. And then last week we really felt like we were hitting it in stride. And Audrey's been a champion from the beginning. Like she's, you know, she was in her room for a long time. And then we were kind of like, oh, you're in your room, you know, too much. But she's in class. So it's, you know, it's all right. It's understandable.
Yeah. Where else is she going to be?
When I moved my office out to the guest house, she moved out into the dining room. But now in the morning when we make smoothies, we have to like wait for her to be ready before we turn the blender on and stuff.
Oh, right. Yeah.
We can't get the smoothies made before she's out there. So we're learning a new rhythm of that.
Yeah, new routine.
And then this week we hear the going back to school plans for the Burbank Unified School District.
Ah.
And it's just like in January, they're making us make a choice between putting our kids back in a hybrid situation, right? Which is where they'd go to school half the time. In middle school, it's in the morning for 4 days a week, I think, or 5 days a week. In the afternoon cohort, then they just come in just for the afternoon. But that's a hybrid. Or you can go ILA, which is just like distance learning, but it's self-guided.
Oh, like independent study?
Yeah. So every 22 days, you could get a new class and you do one class for 22 days.
Oh, wow.
And it's kind of intense. It's kind of like your typical GED kind of program, you know? So it's glorified homeschooling kind of thing.
Yeah. For myself, I would almost like that because then you could just focus on the one thing. You don't have to like task switch to all these different classes and disciplines and everything. It's like,
right.
Math is math. I'm doing math. I'm done. Like, okay, now on to history. History is history, you know? So I don't know, but yeah. And we're doing the same. I mean, we're told, like they sent out a survey and it said, you know, like, would you prefer in-school hybrid type model or distance learning? And the way they're posing it is like you have to choose one or the other because that's how they're going to staff.
I understand that. Yes.
Yeah. So if you say, I want to go in and maybe in January you don't feel comfortable for whatever the reason, you know, whatever numbers are and infection rates and whatever it might be, but you don't feel comfortable, then it's like, oh, well, we don't have a spot for you in distance learning.
Nope.
So now you're like,
you're stuck.
You know, like, yeah, you're stuck.
You make a choice. Today was the deadline for us. We had to make the choice by today for January.
Right.
And then we have to hope that Burbank USD and the LA USD and the whole governor of California, when they decide to send people back to school, that we're on board with it. And then my biggest concern is, so I'm...
Well, it's a school board voting on it, right?
They are, but I think they said that they would follow LAUSD and or the governor if the governor mandates the January stuff.
So they won't go out on their own, huh?
I don't think they haven't fully...
Funding or something?
They haven't been very open with how they're making these decisions. And of course, the teachers union is supposedly involved.
Sure.
But some of the teachers we know say, we haven't been asked. Nobody's put a vote to the teachers, you know, yet. They have a very similar survey for the teachers. Which one would you teach? Would you like to be a sponsor for the ILA kids? Or would you like to be in person in the hybrid scenario?
See, with ours, they're doing the same thing. But if you choose to be in distance learning or something where you're not able to be in the classroom,
mm-hmm.
you have to show some sort of medical documentation
right.
to say, yeah, I'm someone at risk, you know, like
exactly
whatever. I have emphysema or something. I mean, I don't know what people have, but, you know, or I have asthma or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we decided overall on distance learning. I figure if, you know, the all clear signal is given, it's easier to open up the school than it is to just go back and forth distance in school. Just, you know.
Right.
My main concern is that we go into the classroom, we go into the school, there's some sort of like outbreak at a school. Now we're just back distance learning. And the inevitable is we just prolong the distance learning longer than it otherwise would have been.
Into next school year.
My opinion is, screw it. We're already here.
Right.
Just, it sucks for everybody. I wholeheartedly agree. I would rather my kids be in school. My job would be easier if kids were in school.
Right.
Everything would be easier.
People working at home would be easier. People could go back to their offices. People could not go back to their offices and work from home. You know what I mean? Everything would be easier if the kids were going to school.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But at the same time, we're here. There's no reason to, like, blow it up, which the numbers are blowing up, but there's no reason to blow it up.
There's no reason to contribute to the numbers already going up by opening the schools.
Right. And then we wind up next fall back where we are right now.
Right.
And then they, January 2022, we're going to open. What survey do you want to do? You know, and then it's like, it's just this roller coaster. And it's like, let's just like eradicate it and just get back to it.
So on Wednesday, we're on a Zoom with the other parents and this and the administrators and all that stuff. We did three Zooms this week about this opening, reopening in January.
Like official or just?
Official. The middle school did two, and then the high school did one.
Gotcha.
And we did all three of them. And in the first one, I gave a speech, you know, and the chat stream went off, and they're like, yeah, what he said, you know, people loved it. And this one guy DM'd me. And he was like, oh, we should connect. And I was like, and we should do this. We should have like a Google sheet and we'll put together a new letter to the superintendent. And Ann looks at me, she goes, you podcast, you work nonstop at Disney and you're doing all this stuff and the kids and the family. When are you going to do that? You can't do that. Let somebody else do it. Jump on somebody else's coattails. So I talked to this father and he and I were chatting about it. We were like, yeah, we got to get a new letter to the superintendent. We got to sign this petition and stuff. So we signed a petition that's going through, hopefully. I think it got its limit of votes or whatever. But yeah, it was just bad. You know, it's like we have a bad situation right now. But instead of the bad situation you have, why don't you choose between these two worse situations that we could give you? You know?
So how many student population is the Burbank School District?
Oh, I don't know. So
would you guess?
So the middle schools, I think the middle schools each, there's like three or four of them, and they have 1,000 people in each of those.
Okay.
And then there's a couple of high schools, and I think they have similar numbers. So I think it's probably 10,000. Does that sound right? Does that sound like a small school district?
Our school district is 10,000.
Okay.
Roughly.
Maybe that's it.
We have two middle schools. We have two high schools, a continuation school, and then off the top of my head, like 8 or 9 elementary schools, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. I'd have to go through all the names, but I won't bore you. I was just wondering how big it was.
I'm guessing if their elementary schools involve two, then it's going to be bigger than that.
Yeah. Oh, it's unified versus a union or something school district. Yeah.
Yeah. Unified school district.
Right.
Might be double that.
So all this COVID talk and everything.
Oh, you know, well, let's switch to more COVID talk, but in movies.
From COVID-19, let's talk COVID-23 and Songbird.
Yes.
So it sounds like you were a songbird at this meeting that you were in and it got some traction. But yeah, so COVID-23 looks like it's taken place in 2020. Well, I guess it would be 2023, right? That's because that's the year the
right.
The coronavirus comes out. And this takes place in, what do they say, 213 weeks in lockdown or something? So this takes place like 2.5 years later or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like 2025. So it's near future.
Right.
So it's not like, it's like within 5 years.
It's a dystopic near future event, yes.
Yes. So COVID-23 is another virus that attacks the brain tissue.
Mm.
It starts off, I do like the misdirection in the beginning. You don't know. You think it's like a skater movie,
yeah,
and he's going to ollie off of the top of the building or something, and he's talking to his girl on a FaceTiming. And so the misdirection is kind of cool.
Right.
But then they, like, you see the Santa Monica Pier, and the Ferris wheel is like half destroyed.
Right.
And I'm thinking, it's a coronavirus. It's not a zombie virus.
Uh-huh.
This isn't a zombie apocalypse. It's like a bunch of people with a fever and achy joints. Like, why would the Ferris wheel be like half destroyed? You know, I don't get that.
Yeah, and it's not like, and you said 2.5 years, right? It's not going to fall apart in 2.5 years. It's not like 20 years. Like, give it 20 years to fall apart or something like that, right?
Oh, totally, yeah. And, you know, I mean, everything's bombed out, you know, and the one thing that I took from it, though, like, for one, okay, we're in the middle of what we're doing, and either it's like doom scrolling. You've heard of doom scrolling.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You mean what everybody does when they wake up in the morning and they check their Instagram.
you find like the worst and most devastating news stories, and you just drill down into like how many, you know, there was just an earthquake in Turkey and Greece, and how many people died. Oh, was there a tsunami that wiped out the city? And the people just drill in there trying to figure out like how horrible it can be, you know? So it's either you're like doom scrolling and you just want this horrible outcome to happen or something, or the movie is taking place and it's like, well, just think, it ain't that bad.
Right.
Right? So who knows where Michael Bay's going, but he might be just saying, you know what? Hey, everybody, take a chill. It could be way worse. Let's just get through this and it's over.
I think it's a cautionary tale. I think, you know, there are far worse things, you know? However, the fact that we're not taking this seriously and the fact that it's a political thing and it's not a health concern and it's not something we can unify around. If we politicize masks, then we're pushing towards the loss. And I think this shows the extreme where it's like people are coming to your house and, you know, we have the technology to get to this place. And much like the Patriot Act did post 9/11, you know, the people are no longer, the people are seen as targets and as, you know, carriers first before they're seen as with their individual rights.
Shoot on sight.
She'll be shot on sight. Don't try to leave your apartment. You'll be shot on sight. And it's, you know, when you think about the Patriot Act, we lost so much because 9/11 happened. You know, we lost right, so much yeah. freedom because of 9/11. Now, if we get to a place where we can no longer self-police our mask wearing, if we want to think that that's part of being free, then we have a possibility to get to a place very quickly that looks similar, more similar to this than to similar to what we have right now. And it's just a cautionary tale.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's like if you put on a mask, it almost screams which side of the aisle you support.
But that shouldn't be.
No, I know. The virus doesn't care about red or blue.
Right.
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 I mean, but I'm saying, though, that's where the mask thing is. If you put on a mask somehow, you know, although I have seen some like pro-Trump supporters wearing masks that right. say like Make America Great or Trump or whatever. It's, and I'm like, OK, hey, that's your advertisement right there, man. Hey, more power to you. At least you got your mask on. Why do you think the main character, and forgive me, I didn't look up his name, but the gentleman in the movie, why do you think he's immune with a bracelet? Do you think it's something genetic, or what makes him, if you could speculate or pontificate?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think his handsomeness has made him immune to the virus.
Is that KJ Apa?
It is. It is.
Yeah.
And I think he's part Filipino.
You guys are good looking.
Thank you. No. I guess he's from New Zealand. He's a Kiwi.
Oh, he's what are they in New Zealand?
They're Kiwis.
No, I know, but like they're Polynesian. They're it'll come to me.
Oh, yeah, Samoan. Yeah. So he's half
not Samoan.
Well, he's half Samoan and half Kiwi.
Okay.
I told Audrey, I said, "You know, he's Filipino." And she goes, "Oh, I didn't even he looks super white." And I was like, "No, I'm wrong. He's half Samoan, so that's all right. That's close enough. Polynesian, Pacific Islander. That's what I meant to say. He's half Pacific Islander."
Oh, the Maori. Is he Maori?
I don't. Oh, yeah. Those are the native.
To New Zealand.
Native New Zealanders. Yes.
Yeah, I knew it would come to me.
So I don't know what makes him immune, and I don't know what makes them. You know, you would think, you would hope that in 2.5 years they would figure out how to do that. But I guess this is part of just suspending your disbelief and just getting to this place. This project was turned around very quickly.
Oh, I would think so.
Just, you know, we have some friends in the industry And there was some casting going around, and I had a very close person to me that tried out for this, and did, we did a little self-tape for it in our front yard, and I remember doing it for this project, and I thought Songbird was the, sometimes they send out a secret name, like a hidden, like a code name for a project, and I was like, ooh, Songbird, that sounds like a code name, you know, it sounds, doesn't sound like a real name for a project. And
sure.
Then, and even in the log line, they said, you know, action directors, you know, putting together a found footage. They want some real footage of real people and doing, you know, talking about experiences of loss, either real loss or made up loss in coronavirus. And I was like, ooh, a coronavirus movie. That's weird, right? You know, so I helped this.
Too soon.
I helped them do their sides. And we did it in the front yard, and we did this, and we sent it off, and she didn't get the role. But then a couple days ago, Audrey sees this, and she's like, oh, look. Look, here's that movie, you know? And so it turned around in like 4 months. I guess it's still in post-production, and it's going to come out next year. But
yeah,
it looks pretty done. You know, it looks like all the principal photography's done. Maybe they added some stuff to it, and they were doing some extra shooting. But it looks good to me. I don't know. I like this kind of movie.
Yeah, and they do give hint to like a government conspiracy where they go and get the woman who's not sick and drag her off somewhere and so on. And so, you know, I'm curious where that angle's going to go. And they show the sexy time shot.
Yeah.
So I'm curious where some of these scenes are. It does lead to like a lot of open-ended questions and a lot of, like I said, curiosity. I mean, it's a virus movie. They come into the apartment. It's like, well, you're already quarantined. You're already by yourself. Why are they going to come in and drag you off if you don't show any symptoms, you're not sick or whatever? And this woman's trying to run an escape from them. So that angle intrigues me.
Right.
And then the sexy time shot, the woman in the lingerie or whatever doing the negligee dance.
Right.
I don't know if that's just a scene taken out of context to say, like, I'm tired of being locked up. Let's get it on, baby.
Uh-huh.
Or if it's something to do with, you know, a government cover up. There's a lot of angles other than the coronavirus or COVID-23 that they talk about.
Right.
The other thing I find curious too is 8.4 million deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the world is like post-apocalyptic. Fires, helicopters, military, I mean, shoot on sight, all this stuff.
Right.
1918 was over 50 million, and they just had people laying in beds like dying. I mean, they didn't like,
right.
They didn't end the world as we know it. So, I mean, do you think it's just the sign of our times? It's because of technology, social media? I mean,
I think that's part of what I gathered from. So Making Sense with Sam Harris, and I forget the guest who was the expert on it, but yeah, the coronavirus Sam Harris recently that just came out, he said it himself that basically the same thing, the way social media amplifies our thoughts and our feelings, it also amplifies the pathways along which the virus is carried.
Correct.
So it doesn't have to necessarily, it can be a lot more efficient, you know what I mean? It can kill less people and yet terrorize many, many more people. You know, 50 million people can die.
Right.
But in the communications of 2018, you get a newspaper headlines for months, you know?
Yeah, nobody knew
but
about
that's
it.
But that's all you get. And it's like when people were dying, you know, they carted them off and they quarantined them and they kept them out of the major population, and those people passed away. But it doesn't get amplified the same way it does now with the viral nature of social media. And I think even what we talked about a couple of weeks ago. So The Social Dilemma speaks to this. The podcast we just watched from Sam Harris speaks to this. It's all about
right.
The viral nature of social media and how it amplifies everything that we do.
So social media is the virus.
Social media is the pathway along which even a regular or real virus can carry out its path to dominance.
So we should put a mask on social media.
Everybody's got masks on in their pictures of in Facebook. Come on.
That's right. So Nicholas Christakis is the expert guy he talked to about it. So yeah. But yeah, overall, I would say it looks like an interesting conspiratorial to a point. Maybe the whole thing's a conspiracy. I don't know. Sad in a way because we're living a lot of it right now.
Right.
Maybe not to the extent of 213 days or weeks. I hope as hell not 213 weeks.
Oh, please.
Yeah, talk about misery. But, you know, from one depressing story to another, showbiz kids.
Before we get to showbiz kids, I just want to say,
okay,
the one silver lining of Songbird is that the virus only kills ugly people because, like, only the prettiest people live through this. they have some of the prettiest people, like the bombshells in this from Demi Moore, still like hot at whatever she is, 60 years old, all the way down to Sophia Carson and Jenny Ortega. And one of my favorites, I guess, that's kind of in my age range is Alexandria Daddario. Do you know her?
No, but the one thing I'm happy about.
What's that?
At least our wives and children will live. But man, me and you, dude, we're gone. That's right. Demi Moore is the actress.
So, yeah, so now from some of these, they look like Disney Channel alumni. There are half of these kids in here are Disney Channel alumni. Jenna Ortega, Sophia Carson, you know, they've done stuff there.
One depressing story to another, showbiz kids.
Showbiz kids.
I don't know. I mean, it's like Will Wheaton seems like he plays a big role.
Yeah. And I follow Will Wheaton on his Instagram and, you know,
he's like the child nerd or the modern day child nerd, you know, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, he's got his own beer that he does with Stone every year around this time of year. He does that Woot Stout.
He did a tabletop gaming, like, oh, it wasn't YouTube. It was on some other like obscure streaming thing. I used to watch that a little bit and they would introduce these various tabletop games and they would play them. And
oh, that's cool.
It was like Will Wheaton. Eaton and like other like child actors of the day and so on, comedians and stuff. So it was like these guys are just sitting around just playing various tabletop games, like board games, dice games and stuff. But and it was like just them having some beers and like cracking jokes and stuff. It was kind of fun to watch.
No, he's an interesting dude. I love him.
Oh yeah.
His take on life. I mean, it's kind of nice to think of never having to work again. I think we talked about this before. And then just choosing the life that you want to live and then living it in the best way that you living your best life. And it feels like he got to a place where he could live his best life. And yet you pay your dues up front when you're a child star, basically.
Once you become somebody who's interesting enough, then people seek you out for you being an interesting person.
Right.
So if I went to Stone and said, hey, I have this idea for a great beer, you know, I'm a home brewer, they'd be like, we get hundreds of home brewers emailing us all the time. Go away.
Right.
But I think Will Wheaton homebrews.
He
and my guess is, no, I'm serious.
He definitely home brews, but he also home roasts. He home roasts his own coffee.
Oh, does he?
And he'll take like fresh coffee beans and he will do a diary, like a photo log and a notebook of his roasting chronicles of how he takes a batch of coffee beans from fresh to roasted. And how they taste at the end. So he's like, when you have time to set aside and do a nerdy thing like that and to just chronicle it on Instagram for your fans and your fans just eat it up. And they're like, I was hooked and I was down this rabbit hole with him about like, ooh, I wonder how that 14-day roast house tasted compared to the 7-day roast, you know?
That's hilarious. But yeah, you know, you're an interesting person to where like he homebrews or he does whatever he does. And then either A, he approaches Stone or B, Stone approaches
right,
him.
Right.
But either way, it's irrelevant. He has the opportunity.
Right.
I mean, I could not ever have to work again. You know, they call that retirement for some people. But, you know, I could be at the point where it's like, yeah, you know, whatever. I do cool stuff. Like, but nobody's like knocking at my door saying, Jim, you want to come hang out and like roast coffee beans for, you know, we'll do this. No, I mean, I don't understand, but it's like, you know, you have to somehow, like you said, put the work up front as a child actor in the child showbiz or showbiz kids, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in life, those fruits continue to bear or those...
I follow you. Yeah.
Like, you continue to bear fruit later in life, you know?
Right. And it all depends on how you get cultivated and how you are helped, aided by the people around you. And, you know, and classically, parents of child stars are always vilified, and, you know, you don't want to be that showbiz mom and showbiz dad. But, you know, there are times where there are kids that want to do this and have a genuine desire to perform and a desire to be in that spotlight. And it strikes me that Wil Wheaton wasn't like that, you know? And he was kind of pushed into it. And Shia LaBeouf also, if you've seen Honey Boy, it feels like he was kind of pushed into it. And yet, you know, and yet good things do happen to those people, even if they're pushed into it. But you have to have a baseline of support that you can find, whether it's your parents or whether it's someone else, that you can either hit rock bottom and then make it back, kind of a la Drew Barrymore, where she kind of was partying at, you know, Club 54 for at 8 years old, doing lines of coke, and you know what I mean? And,
right.
And then she was able to, you know, hit rock bottom at 16 and then bounce back and have a, you know, a fruitful life in her later years. And then some people never bounce back, you know? And that's kind of the sad cycle of this space.
Or it's like a River Phoenix or something, you know?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you have tough stuff like that.
So this looks interesting. I mean, probably more in your wheelhouse than mine,
right?
Since your kids kind of do some of this stuff.
Right. Commercials and things like that, yeah.
Yeah, or like aspiring or whatever. But then it's like, you know, you might watch this and have second thoughts. You know, I'd be like, wow, I don't know if I want my kids to have a, you know, the trials and tribulations of a child star or something, you know? And
well, I will say we have like 3 auditions for Bryce this week, and just getting him through his regular schoolwork so that we can get to the audition before the deadline is just nerve wracking. But the speed at which both Audrey and Bryce like eat up sides, like, you know, they're given like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 pages of dialogue to learn and memorize. And within a day or two, and like with Bryce, like Audrey's like, she's always, it's good. She asked me to do reading with her. So I read with her and we do the sides together. So at least I see her studying it. I see her learning it. But with Bryce, it's like, he doesn't even like want, like, I'm like, you haven't even looked at those lines yet. You know, we need to record that before tomorrow. You haven't even looked at the lines.
Right.
And I'm like, and he's like, I've done it. I've read it a bunch of times. Like, and I'm like, but I haven't seen you read it at all. Right. So then I will take him and I'll quiz him on it. And he doesn't have it down solid. He's not off book, but he's close. And I'm like, I didn't even see you once crack this open. And you're 75% of the way there. So that's shocking to me. And then when he likes the subject matter and when he likes the stuff that's going on, like, he really hams up into it. Like, he, you know, sometimes some characters are written kind of in a hammy way, especially for kids. And when he finds that quirky kind of odd kid that he would love to play,
like, he connects with.
Yeah, he really connects with it and he really enjoys the role. And those are the things that even because he hasn't gotten any of those, but even when he doesn't do it, if he connects with the character and he's doing the sides, I like that process, and that's a good place to be. Granted, it's only half the time. So the other half the time, it's like, you know, work, and we have to explain that you have to do a lot of work on spec without getting paid, which is the auditioning process. And now that we're in COVID land, you know, you ought to do all these auditions on tape. So you have to like invest in some equipment and some ring lights and some bare walls and stuff. So it's hard, you know, but it is a needed space, you know. You can't have 30-year-olds walking around as kids.
Although in Cobra Kai, but Sam, you know, the girl who played Sam, she plays like the 16-year-old high school kid. She's like 24.
Yes.
So, you know, sometimes I guess you have a young look.
And that young look will serve you very, very well, you know, like Audrey and Bryce are completely different in that realm. Like, Audrey sprouted up and she's a young woman, and, you know, she can pass for much older. She's 14 and we walked in to vote this week. You know, you can vote before the third. So we voted a week before. I said, I have to still vote on a Tuesday because it feels right on a Tuesday. So on Tuesday, we went to the voting booth up here at CSUN, and I went in and, you know, each take one kid to the voting booth with us. So Ann took Bryce and I took Audrey, and, you know, they took Ann off and she went off to her booth. And then I was up next and Audrey's standing behind me, but she's as tall as me. You know, she's 5'7" and I'm 5'10"-ish, five, something like that. And the woman says, we have two to vote here, two to vote. And Audrey's like, no, I'm with him. I'm with him. You know, so she's passing for 18 in here. And, you know, and she's like, why do people think I'm so old? And I'm like, yep, that's the same reason you're not booking the, you know, the 14-year-old jobs, because why not get an 18-year-old who can work all day than get a 14-year-old that looks like an 18-year-old that can't work all day?
Right, yeah. Well, and it's like, why do they think? Because you're 5'7", that's why. So, yeah, I mean, what is this on? I didn't even notice.
HBO.
Oh, HBO, I did notice. Sorry about that, yeah.
Luckily, they have a little bug in the top corner there, so you see that it's HBO.
And then Songbird, that's good. Well, if I had to guess, that's going to be a theatrical release, at least.
You think so?
Well, okay, assuming the theater's back open, you don't think it will be?
No, I feel like it's, I think it's going to be, I thought it was going to be like a, it feels like it might be like a Netflix-ish, or I don't know, some kind of streaming.
You don't think Netflix would have said so?
Yeah, I
don't know.
Yeah, I think it feels streamy. It feels streaming to me.
It does. Wow.
It does.
Yeah, it feels theatrical.
Feels theatrical to you.
But yeah.
Yeah, I think the line is blurred.
Yeah, nowadays for sure. I mean, the line is blurred, especially when the theaters aren't even open. All right, Ted, what have you been watching this week?
So this week, let me check my list here. I've been watching some stuff.
Uh-oh. Were you naughty or nice?
No, I was not. I was neither.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's not, that doesn't even have that stuff on it. Oh, so tonight, did you watch it? Mando, first episode after this.
No, because we put the boys to bed and everything. Yeah, we want to watch it with them. We'll probably get into it tomorrow, Sunday, and get rolling on it. Oh, wait, no, it's a weekly release. That's right.
Yeah, just one episode.
Yeah, so one episode. So yeah, we'll watch it tomorrow then. I forgot they don't drop them all, but... Yeah, we're all caught up with The Mandalorian Season 1.
We did that. Yeah, we finished that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I wanted to watch it. I even told the boys, I'm like, you guys finish dinner, we'll watch it before you go to bed. And, of course, they monkey around, and it's like, all right, now it's way too late. Screw it. We'll do it tomorrow.
Yep, you missed out.
That's right.
Why don't you tell us what you've been watching, and I'll see whether I've watched any of that stuff.
Okay, so we watched a documentary, Playing with Fire.
Oh, yes.
So that's a short document, hour 15 minutes. Talks about this family's journey, like through to financial independence. And they interview a lot of the major like bloggers, vloggers in that like financial independence, retire early space. Didn't tell me anything I didn't know about like the FIRE movement or anything. It was good. I mean, I think it's a good introduction if someone's not familiar with what it's about.
So I'm not familiar with it, with what it's about. I mean, I've heard of it. The FI part, I definitely know. I don't know this RE. That sounds like it's the same, but it's a cool way to make it into a word.
Well, it's pretty much you save a ton of money. You up your saving rate 70%.
Ugh. How is that possible? How are you making so much money that you can save that much?
Or you lower your spending rate.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I, you know, yeah.
Right? So it's that you save a ton. And they talk about it, too. Like, they leave San Diego. They move to, I think it was Bend, Oregon.
Okay.
But for the first 6 months, they lived back with his parents in Iowa. They get rid of their BMWs, and now they're driving around like, you know, I don't even know what they were driving around.
Jalopies.
Not really jalopies, but just like 10-year-old cars, you know, or whatever. He starts riding his bike everywhere, you know, and all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, yeah, you just get to the point, and they weren't financially independent yet. They still had like 10 years on their plan to go, but it was like the entry into their journey to it.
Right.
And they interview like a bunch of people who get into the financial independence thing and like how they did it. Some people are like, yeah, I retired at 33, you know, or whatever it was. And
but you're a stockbroker, so it's all right. That's how you did it.
The majority of them just from my experience from just listening to podcasts and reading blogs and stuff, the majority are like software engineers and tech people.
Right.
Not like, it's not like they invented Facebook, made $1 billion to go, oh, I guess I'm financially independent. They were like the coders and stuff, making $100,000 a year or something, right?
Uh-huh.
But they were the kind of people that were really good at math, and they just like dialed in the math and had the and maybe, I don't know, I'm just guessing, but maybe they worked like 15 hours a day and they just didn't have any time to spend their money, so they saved all this money. And
Google gives out free food at their campuses, so you can eat lunch and dinner there, or breakfast and lunch there, and then just skip right. dinner, and then you don't spend any money on food.
And they do your laundry, they watch your kids, they do everything. So yeah. But yeah, anyway, so that was pretty good. Like I said, it's a good primer.
What's it on? What streaming service is on? You rent it?
I rented it. Yeah, we rented it on Vimeo, but it's also on Amazon. It's on, I don't know, it's on like where,
anywhere you can rent. Yeah, where,
anywhere you can rent it. Yeah, it's like $5 or $4 or $5. I don't remember exactly what, but we watched all the Cabin.
Without the children in the room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like I said, it was trainer fodder. I mean,
yeah.
We're going through and like, you know, your heart rate's at 170, you know, and you're like in the throes of some VO2 max interval and you're like trying to breathe, but you want to laugh. I mean, enemas and it was ridiculous.
What was it, like a coffee enema or something?
Right.
And it was like, that's the color it's supposed to be when it comes out, not the color when it goes in.
Right. It was, you know, Clarissa said it too. I mean, it was awfully crass.
Yes.
But what I would say, though, is, and he kind of sums it up at the end in his own comedic sort of a way. But what I would say, though, is it does go deeper than what the surface is. It does get into a lot of, you know, trying to bring people together, trying to resolve various issues. Once it gets a little touchy, they turn back to being crass
again.
So they never really get to the meat of what the message is.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of dance around the surface of the message. But if you're paying enough attention and you can look through the crassness of it, I think you can say, like, you know, it was actually like the message and the meaning was decent.
I mean, his wife has to be the most patient person in the world.
She's a saint.
She's a saint for sure.
Yeah.
Like, to put up with Bert stuff is just like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The guy loves being naked. It's shocking. And then we are 4 episodes into My Next Guest Needs No Introduction.
Oh, yeah.
With David Letterman. Have you seen that?
I watched one episode. I watched the Obama episode just because it's election season and I wanted to see a little bit.
And that's his first episode.
That's the first episode. And it's so good.
Dude, how do you open with Obama? That was amazing.
Well, no. You open with Obama and you open with the videotaping. The cold open, I believe, was the videotaping of him calling the Obama people or talking to Barack Obama on the phone. And it's like, and then he hangs up and he goes, I think that's a hard pass, you know? And it was just so hilarious that like he's such a known quantity that he could pick up the phone and have his people call Obama's people and then get him on the phone and then get him on the show. And then Obama and Letterman are throwing like accolades back and forth at each other about how great they think they are, you know, they think each other is. And I watched that episode and I said to myself, I saw Robert Downey, you know, I saw the promo, it has Robert Downey Jr. and other people. And I'm like, letdown. Like, when is Robert Downey Jr. a letdown? When you open with Barack Obama, the president of the United States, how can you go anywhere from there? You know, I stopped watching because I was like, no, I don't want this to be spoiled by anything else. You know, the excitement in the audience, they don't know who they're going to see. They know they're going to see David Letterman. They know it's going to have a guest that needs no introduction.
And he does that for every episode.
And every time the people, I bet, are losing their minds. But never were they losing their minds from my perspective, because we knew, because we're tuning in and we get to choose the episode we're watching. But I was like, this is how you end a season. This is how you start a season. Like, what's this? It's backwards.
Well, okay. I thought the same thing going into it.
Okay.
The interview was so phenomenal that I'm like, we have to see more. And like you said, you know, going into it, because you're on Netflix, you can see who the titles right. are. So, you know, George Clooney is number two.
Okay.
You know, that was awesome. I mean, he's a cool guy. You know, he's a cool cat and interesting, funny. You know, it's just hilarious how everybody makes fun of his beard.
Uh-huh.
You know, and but episode three.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you have to have your family watch episode three.
Who is it?
Oh, what is it? Malala
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yousafzai.
Oh, wow. Okay. You got me there.
So I'm probably like
you're butchering the name. It's
her name, but Malala Yousafzai, I think is how you pronounce it. And she's the woman, she was the teenager who was.
She was the girl who got shot in the head and because she was trying to go to school.
Not just that, but she was also like a woman's rights activist and so on.
Yes.
Who was also going to school, and the Taliban shot her in the head. And she said, like, you know, I'm known as one of two people, the girl who got shot in the head by the Taliban or the girl who's fighting for women's rights.
Oh,
you know, and nobody makes any other distinction.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So it's funny, though. It's like, wow, that's really interesting, because I knew her as the girl who got shot in the head and then became a women's rights activist. But she was that before she got shot in the head.
That was the reason she got shot in the head.
That, exactly. Right. So that one was great. Jay-Z, interesting interview. Not a very interesting guy to interview.
Oh, wow.
Right? So, I mean, he has like a huge personality and a huge character when he's rapping, mm-hmm. when he's on mm-hmm. stage. I think when he's the guy in charge, in a sense, when he's like the leader of the show.
Right.
But when he's the one being interviewed and asked the questions, he's a very humble guy. I mean, he's very soft-spoken, very humble, doesn't want to really talk about himself or talk about much.
Right.
But it's almost like to his detriment, though. You know what I mean? Like, Obama talked about himself and he has the story down. I mean, you know, he knows his story. George Clooney is exactly the same. I mean, he like knows how to just dialogue and give it back and forth. And, you know, Malala was the same way, and she kind of dialogues, gives it back and forth. And then like Jay-Z comes up and he doesn't want to talk about himself or anything, you know? And
so maybe Jay-Z's kind of guarded. Maybe that's more of a guarded. Maybe it's more of a defense mechanism than really that.
Could be. I mean, his story is interesting. His background.
Did you talk about Beats? No, that's not him. Sorry.
No, that's Dr. Dre.
That's Dr. Dre.
I mean, his story is fascinating. His story is interesting. Everything about his story, I mean, he's a cool guy to listen to and stuff, to talk, and his where he comes from, where he is.
Right.
But it's almost like he's humble to a fault, to where he doesn't make for a great interview.
Should have got Beyonce.
Exactly.
They asked Beyonce, and Beyonce said, no, I'm busy, but you could have Jay-Z.
No, but I'll send you my husband.
Send my husband in my stead.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to more, but I'll tell you though, man, the first three were, but I'd say episode three, you know, George Clooney was great.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. But I would say episode three though, oh yeah, you have to watch it with your family, because I think your kids would be into it. And, you know, like I told Clarissa, I said, so what were you doing at 17? You know, like, this girl's winning Nobel Peace Prizes. What are you doing? You know, like, I mean, she's because I think she is 23 when this was done.
Right.
By 23, she's shot in the head, wins a Nobel Peace Prize, attending Oxford University in England. You know, it's like, okay, what are you doing? Like, this girl's lived more life than I have in 49 years. You know, like, and she's only getting started.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, oh my God, man. Yeah. So, and you know, he's a fantastic interviewer.
Amazing.
And you know, the one thing that the Obama interview shined light on, and I'll tell you, man, I don't care what you think about Trump, if you're in favor of or you hate him or whatever it is. And likewise for Obama, whether you hate him or you like him or whatever, you can sit down, have a conversation, you can dialogue, the guy's funny. You could see his intelligence. Ugh. An all-around, charismatic, captivating individual.
Right.
I can't imagine Donald Trump sitting down and having a heart-to-heart conversation with somebody without feeling attacked,
right.
Feeling he needs to attack, feeling he needs to yell at people or put him down or, you know, yeah. I don't even know. I mean, like, he just can't do it. He's incapable.
So I think there's a thing where, and I haven't heard anyone ever say it this way, but Trump lives in a zero-sum existence.
Right.
He lives in a mindset of winners and losers, which means everything is a game. And when you gamify everything and you make everything about winning and losing and scoring points, then you just, like, you cease existing in a real relative world. You know what I mean? You turn everything into black and white and you make it so that there are only winners and losers.
Right. I'm on top. You suck.
Right. And I need right. to say something that will get under your skin. And this is the thing I hear these things that he says and, like, that people say, why did he tweet that? That's such a damning thing to say. That's such a weird thing for a sitting president to say. And yet he says it because he knows.
Oh, there's no diplomacy.
Well, he knows that the two things will happen. His supporters will love it and his detractors will loathe it so much that they will obsess about it. And he's won both of those camps. He gets under the skin of the people that hate him. And he gets the accolades and the applause from the people that like him, that support him. So he's in this, you know, winning scenario, winning cycle of what he's doing. And you just hope that that isn't enough to catapult him like it has in the past, you know? But I think he does have an understanding of social media. And once again, we're bringing back to social media, but he is a kind of a virus too. Like the people that like him will read his stuff and read about around him and about him. And the people that don't like him, the people that hate him, will hate read about him.
They'll doom scroll him.
They'll doom scroll into their own space. Yeah. Right. And I'm just like, well, you know, you have to see that he's playing you when he's saying things that he knows you're going to hate. You know, he's saying it to his base. He's speaking to his base, sure.
Sure.
But he's also speaking to the Obama bros on, you know, on Pod Save America that hate him to their core because they supported, you know, and they worked in the White House when it was a noble, you know, space and you could last there for more than 2-3 years. But anyway, yeah, so it is a strange, strange thing. Yeah, you covered most of the things I watched.
Well, I got one more.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we kind of did a lot this week. So we're all caught up on season 3 of The Life-Size City. So that is one.
What's that?
Yeah, that's what I was going to get into. It's a little bit obscure. It is on Toronto Television, Toronto Public Access Television. And you kind of have to hack it a little bit, you know, like either through a VPN or like.
Oh.
I use Kodi and I put in like an add-on into Kodi or something.
You're like, I'm Canada, eh?
Yeah, like you're geofenced, you know? But it's this guy that I've kind of been a fan of over the years because he's like one of these urban bicycle transport guru, you know, TED Talk guys, you know, he's been on TED for a number of discussions. Uh-huh. And so he has a show out, The Life-Size City. And it's about urbanism and like what people are doing to make their cities better and improve in spite of an interstate running through the middle of the city or in spite of, you know, coronavirus or in spite of even before coronavirus, but in spite of, you know, just things that have their backs up against the wall in their neighborhood, uh-huh. you know, because of disinvestment or something. And in spite of disinvestment, what are they doing to uplift their neighborhood and their families and their community and so on? And he goes around the world and, you know, to like Medellin. And this year he was in New Orleans. He has LA coming up, which I'm just waiting for. I can't wait to see the LA one.
Yeah.
But you know, he's done Paris and Copenhagen, and he, you know, and he lives in Copenhagen, but yeah, so it's just this kind of like urban revival, urban renewal kind of a show that he interviews. It's sort of documentary style, and we like watching it, and we follow him on Instagram and all that kind of stuff. Michael Colville Anderson, who's a Canadian who now lives in Copenhagen, but it's cool. I mean, but like I said, it's not you like it's actually no, I take that back. I think the first two seasons are on KCRW. No, not KCRW. What is it?
PBS.
No, what is PBS there in LA?
It's KCRW or Pacifica Radio, or is it?
Oh no, I'm thinking of the radio station.
Radio stations, yeah.
No, what's the but KCRW? Is that the TV station?
No, that's also a radio station. That's like Santa Monica.
Whatever the PBS station is in LA.
So PBS, yeah.
Yeah, so it's on there, and I think it's on a number of other PBS stations around the country. I think on that you can only get the first two mm-hmm. seasons, where the third season, because I guess the TVO, the Toronto TV, whatever that is, I think they have the rights or something, so it airs there first, and then it gets distributed other places. But
so you have to wait a little bit.
Yeah.
Or I will.
But anyway, so cool.
So the only thing that I watched that I missed from off of the stuff you covered was after seeing the Chicago 7, the trial of the Chicago 7.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
I was like, last night I was into an Aaron Sorkin mode. I was like, oh, I should watch some Aaron Sorkin, you know? So I saw West Wing. West Wing came across my feed.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He did do that.
So I plugged in West Wing, and I watched the opening scene. It's a bar where Rob Lowe's, you know, picking up his girlfriend or whatever, picking up a date. And then I was like, oh, but what's that other show? And I was like, oh, Newsroom. So I jumped out after one scene of the West Wing to Newsroom. And I watched the first episode of the Newsroom and it's that huge speech that he gives in the beginning. And, you know, it kind of tanks his whole career and he has to work his way back from it. But it's such a powerful speech, and it's such a timely speech about, you know, what makes America the greatest country in the world, you know, and this leading question this sophomore asks. And then he's like, we're not the greatest country in the world. And here's why. And he runs off all these facts and stuff. And it's just this extremely powerful scene. But it just leads into a great series. And, you know, HBO again, you know, just showing their HBO-ness. It's a wonderful, wonderful series. So I'm going to go back and watch a couple episodes of Ted Lasso, listen to a lot of fantasy football podcasts, trying to figure out how to fix my two teams.
Dude, I went from third place to, there's eight teams in our league. I went from third place to seventh place in like 3 weeks, man. Injuries are crushing me. Injuries are destroying me.
Injuries. And now we're in the bye week. So it's bye weeks on time. And I went from 10th place in both of my 10-team leagues to 7th and 8th place. So, yay, I'm working my way up.
You're moving your way up the ladder. Yeah, I'm working my way down, man. But no, the last place guy, I don't think, I mean, he's 0-7 at this point. Yeah, he's awful.
Do you have any penalties for the last place? Does he have to get a tattoo?
No, what would a
tattoo? Like the winner gets to pick a tattoo.
Oh, I've heard of that stuff.
My work league has an extra $5 for the last three places to keep everybody motivated to not, you know, tank the season when you start losing the way we're losing. So it's like you pay in for a little bit, and then you have to pay an extra penalty if you end up in the final three spots.
Even though I'm like at the bottom, I mean, I'm hoping I don't stay there. There's still time to recoup. I mean,
oh yeah,
an injury here, or, you know, whatever, you pick up whatever somebody, and McCaffrey ever comes off injured reserve.
Next week. You have him?
I do.
Man, you're good. Yeah. You're golden the rest of the run.
Yeah, I had McCaffrey, Nick Chubb, and Prescott. Three solid players that the first 2 weeks just crushed it for me. I was destroying everybody. And then, like, I just fell apart, you know? And it's like, because they all got injured.
McCaffrey will probably be back next week. He's practicing already, so that'll be good. And then I think Chubb will be back in a couple of weeks. I think you'll be solid at running back in a couple of weeks for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, Tay, we better get out of here. So we will talk again next week. Glad you had a mild week. So
you too.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe we'll get back to some, I don't know, excitement. Who knows what that looks like? Hopefully nothing major. We don't need any Songbird, you know, as it were. We don't need COVID-23.
Nope. All right.
All right, man. Hey, enjoy some T-Vision, and we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week.
All right, later.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.